Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by high-caliber millwrights, this is The Bald-Faced Truth.
I always try to look, like, online, especially on one of my employer's websites, like Oregon Live, but I try to figure out, like, you know, hey, what are the big stories today? One of the top stories on Oregon Live today is about Steph Curry, who claims that the Moda Center, right here in the state of Oregon, has some of the best popcorn around. Is that true? Do we have some of the best popcorn around? Is that what we would trot out as, you know, evidence that, hey, we're a good city? What would Oklahoma City trot out as evidence that it is one of the best cities in the country? I want to talk about that. I want to talk about game two of the Thunder and Blazers playoff series. I want to talk to about Steven Adams. I want to talk about Russell Westbrook. And who better to go to than the sports columnist at the Oklahoman, Jenny Carlson. You can find her stuff at newsok.com. Is that right, Jenny? Did I get that right? Newsok.com?
We're no popcorn palace, but you got it right.
It's weird to me. I've never even tried the popcorn. Maybe I'm missing out. I keep telling people what to see when they're in Portland, and I've never said, go get popcorn at the Moda Center.
You know, the only claim to popcorn fame that we have around here is that at one point somebody broke a story that around our minor league baseball park, they apparently at one point were piping the smell of popcorn out into, like, the around the ballpark, so it smelled like popcorn as you walked up to the park.
I
don't know if that's true, and I don't know if they still do it, but that's the one thing I can tell you about popcorn in Oklahoma City. I'm done with that.
I love it. All right, so give us, first of all, game one happens. What's the reaction among Thunder fans and people in Oklahoma City to what happened in game one?
Back to shooting nightmares of other games this season. I mean, the deal is that the Thunder is not a very good shooting team. I mean, this is something we've known from pretty much day one. I mean, this is not a team built like a lot of other, you know, good teams in the NBA. It doesn't have a bunch of, you know, knockdown shooters from deep. So this is a team that really has to win with defense. And so, you know, to see the defense not play well early, give up 39 in the first quarter, and then to see the shooting just continue to struggle, you know, it was really kind of the perfect recipe for disaster in game one for Oklahoma City. And the fact that they were still in that ball game late, despite giving up so many points early, despite shooting so terribly from three throughout that game, I mean, it is disappointing to see, but I guess maybe the silver lining is that they did come somewhat close to actually winning the ball game, despite some pretty massive failings along the way.
What would losing this series do to the psyche of that franchise?
Yeah, you know, obviously it'd be disappointing, especially considering the peak performances that we've seen out of this bunch. You know, when they were playing well early part of 2019, this calendar year, you know, they looked legitimately like a team that could contend, that could, I mean, for all of it, not just in the West, but potentially, you know, get past the Warriors. And to see them struggle so much down the stretch and really not be able to get much footing, obviously they won their last five, but, you know, when you see the potential of what this group was at points in the year, I think it's definitely, you know, it's definitely difficult to think about the fact that maybe they aren't going to be able to even get through a first round series. So, you know, they've never been a knee-jerk reaction type of bunch. I mean, that's never been their MO. Clearly, the fact that they've continued to get to the playoffs in these seasons after Kevin Durant's departure is no small thing. I mean, we've seen franchises. Look what the Cavs did after they lost LeBron the first time. You know, they just basically went in the tank until he came back. So the fact that Oklahoma City has made the playoffs inside the walls of Thunder headquarters is no small thing. But clearly, when you've got two superstars in Westbrook and George, and if they would face another year of first-round exit, I mean, obviously it would be a situation where, you know, they'd really have to start thinking, what's the deal here? What do we have to change to get over that hump?
We're talking to Jenny Carlson, a sports columnist in Oklahoma City. You can read her stuff at newsok.com. Jenny, the Russell Westbrook act is, I've always liked him. I like that he's got a chip on his shoulder. I like that he's edgy. Is that wearing people thin in Oklahoma City if you don't win, or do people still view him as a tentpole of the franchise because he stayed there and Kevin Durant didn't?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely pulling at some different heartstrings. Clearly, his willingness to stay, to really become even bigger, an even bigger force of nature in that season after Durant left. I mean, I think that was you know, that's never far from people's minds. But pretty clearly, you know, he's rankled a few people, and not necessarily on the court, but off. And believe me, there's stuff about his on-court performance that drives me crazy and probably drives other people crazy. But I think as much as anything, the whole bristling at every, you know, everything, I think that's made people tired. But I think there's been some on-court stuff that, you know, it's kind of paired up to make people really, you know, weary to a point. You know, the fact that if he doesn't get a call that he thinks should go his way or something's going wrong, you know, his first reaction is to foul the very next thing. I mean, it's his routine as the sunrise, and you know, it's just the way he is. And after all this time in the league, you would think that there would be a maturing, and there hasn't been. And I think that has gotten a little bit tired in some eyes. But you know, the fact that he's still the I used force of nature before, and that seems to fit again. But you know, that he just is always ready to play. He may not be perfect. He may chunk shots that you would rather he put in his back pocket and never shoot again. He might turn the ball over more than you'd like. But I do think his willingness to give it all every time he goes out a lot of times makes up for some of that stuff. But I think there's probably more people that are more exacerbated with him now than you probably saw, you know, last year before. He is not a perfect player. There's no doubt about that. And I think some people, there has been sort of a tiring of that.
We're talking to Jenny Carlson of the Oklahoman. At the postgame news conference, your colleague Barry Trammell asked him a couple questions. Russell, I'm going to play this. Russell kind of pulls a Rasheed Wallace with Barry.
Yeah, Barry Trammell with the Oklahoman. Russell, you've played against Dennis before since he left you, but could you tell he had a little extra in his step tonight trying to play against his old pals?
Next question.
Russ, did you think getting down 38-21, 17-point deficit to come back and make it a game down the stretch, is that a good sign for the rest of the playoffs?
Next question.
What's going on there? What's happening with these two guys?
That's a good question. Russ and Barry have gotten sideways a couple times, and I don't think it's anything that Barry has asked that has been inappropriate. But he's not going to not ask questions because Russ doesn't want him to. And, you know, very much like we see Russell Westbrook always want to be in control on the court, he wants to be the same way off the court. And, you know, he's basically tried to scare Barry off from asking questions, and it's not happening. And so I don't think Russ is real comfortable with that. He likes to be able to control situations, and that's not happening with Barry or with any of our folks. And so, but it's definitely hit that level with those two, and that'll probably be pretty common because Barry's not going to stop asking him questions, and doesn't look like Russell's going to stop saying similar sorts of things in response to those questions.
I was right there in the news conference, and I wondered what would happen if I got the mic next and asked Barry's question word for word. Would Russell answer it, you think, or is it, or would he also say next question?
Yeah, you know, that it's definitely an interesting, what would that be, psychology experiment? So yeah, I mean, I'd be fascinated. I think if it was generally asked in the same way, if he didn't sort of register it, which, you know, he's a pretty smart guy, he might see through it, but at the same time, he might not the first time too, and it would be fascinating to see, that's for sure.
I mean, I have no interest in the answer, but I kind of left that news conference going, what if I had asked? If I got the microphone next and said, like Barry said, and then asked it word for word, I wonder if Russell then would acknowledge, was it just a, hey, I don't respect Barry, I don't want to talk, I don't want to answer Barry's question, or is it Russell is going to take his ball and go home? I just thought that was interesting. All right, what do you think happens in game two? What's the response here from the Thunder? You know this team.
Well, what I know of this team is that they are as consistently inconsistent as any team we've had in Oklahoma City since the Thunder moved here. You know, as I mentioned before, they've had some exhilarating high points in the year, but also some times when you wonder if it's the same guys in uniform or not. So to predict what will happen, I don't know. You know, people that have been around the league say that playoff series are won by your superstars and your coaching adjustments for the most part. And obviously Paul George did not play well in game one. He's going to have to shoot better. We knew he would have to play well in this series. You know, I don't know if he has to play the MVP Paul George level, because I think that the Thunder has some other strengths going for it that maybe it didn't at the time that he was playing at that MVP level. But he's got to be better than he was. He can't shoot like that again. So if he didn't shoot at all, you know, those four or so days before the series opener, and you know, that was maybe a little rust we saw, he's going to have to be better. And then we're going to have to see, you know, obviously Terry Stotts will do some things differently, but what is Billy Donovan? How does he adjust to, you know, what they saw in game one? Frankly, you know, there's some things that have nothing to do with either of those things, though. The Thunder has to do better. They've got to make shots at the rim. They had some easy looks from close that clanked off the rim. They've got to be able to do a better job without Nurkic playing in this series. They've got to be better at the rim. And obviously, Enes Kanter just had a phenomenal game one. You know he's going to score, and you know to an extent he's going to rebound, but you know, the Thunder can't let him rebound that much in any game from here on out. They've got to figure out ways to wrestle back control of the interior a little bit more with Steven Adams, Jeremy Grant, those guys. I think they have to be able to, you know, be at more of an advantage in the paint, and they definitely weren't in game one. So, you know, some of that's on the guys individually, but some of that does go back to what does Billy Donovan and his staff do to adjust heading into game two. It's going to be fascinating. That's for sure. You know, I think a 2-0 Portland lead, especially if it's some of the same things, you know, a real hot start, shooting woes for the Thunder. You know, I think it could start to look pretty grim for the Thunder, even as they come home. You know, obviously 7-game series, a lot can happen, but boy, 2-0 is really hard to come back from, even you know, if you haven't played at all in your home court just yet.
All right, Oklahoma City. I you know, I've been to a lot of cities, and I know Oklahoma City gets a bad rap. People tell me it's like a tarmac covered with tumbleweed. What are you going to do there, Canzano? You're going to be stuck there. What's to do in Oklahoma City? Sell the city to us.
Well, as I'm talking to you right now, I'm sitting in a neighborhood of town that is called the Plaza, and it's like several neighborhood areas we've got that have bubbled up in town. And from where I'm sitting, I see people sitting outside on patios having a beer. I see Lime scooters waiting to be ridden. There's even a moped, like a scooter moped, sitting over there. There's wall painting, like, you know, all sorts of hippy-dippy stuff that I don't pretend to know anything about. But, you know, that's just where I happen to be right now. And there are several areas like this. So I've lived here almost 20 years, and when I got here, it was probably more the tumbleweed-covered tarmac that you've heard people talk about. But it's grown up a lot. It's got some areas that are definitely fun, places to eat, places to do stuff. People watch, actually go and do stuff yourself, and so you can be watched. It's definitely come a long way in the last 20 years. I think you'll find some places to eat, drink, and be merry while you're here, John.
All right. Jenny Carlson from the Oklahoman. I really appreciate you, Jenny. Thanks for making time.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
All right. There she is. OKC. Get a little flavor of OKC. Punchin' Audio's coming up. Plus, an author who has essentially written a book about Tiger Woods that Tiger doesn't even know about. Leave it here. Halftime of the Blazers-Thunder game one, I walked up to the concourse. Get off of press row. I got to get off of press row at halftime. First of all, first and foremost, look at press row. Look at us. Look at us. We're follically challenged. We're not in the best shape of our lives in the most cases. We're aging. I like to see how the younger, more vibrant sports fan enjoying the game lives. So I walk up to the concourse, generally at halftime. Sometimes I go 100 level, sometimes I go 300 level and walk around because I want to see what people are talking about, what they're thinking about. And you know what struck me is what a nice arena the building formerly known as the Rose Garden Arena is. It is a very nice venue. And it's not the age of the arena. There are newer arenas. It's not the size of the arena. There are smaller and larger arenas. It's the improvements that have been made inside the arena. I appreciate them so much more now that I've been in buildings for the NCAA tournament. I was in San Jose. I was in Louisville, Kentucky. I was in Tampa, Florida. I will soon be in Oklahoma City. So I get a chance to see some buildings. All right. I've been around a little bit. This is not like my first rodeo. And one of the things that I like when I go into an arena, it's not just accessibility to the arena. And I think that's one of the challenges of Moda Center. I don't think it's a real easy, it's a congested area to begin with. And it makes me think about Major League Baseball. It makes me think about Autzen Stadium. It makes me think about Research Stadium. I don't know what you like in a stadium, but the first thing I start with is, can we get in and out of the stadium without it being a complete migraine? And Moda Center's got its challenges because it does get congested, especially if it's like a earlier weeknight game in that area. You really have to be careful getting in there and out of there. It can take you 30, 45 minutes to get over and around and parked and get in and out. And I park like the regular common fan. I don't use some VIP parking pass. I don't, because I try to give myself the real experience. Like, what if I was really going to the game?
Really?
I don't use the media parking.
You're kidding.
No. Uh-uh.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's one of those things that makes me more relatable to the average fan. No, I just have found this is something that I think all media are guilty of, okay? I'm more guilty than anybody, and I'm not trying to say that, like, I'm different than other media. I think we get a little detached from the fan experience. And you know, Bobby, you've been to games as a fan. You've been to games as a media person. You go through a separate entrance with a pass. They feed you a meal. They give you a game program. They give you parking. You're in a great mood. By the time the game starts, like, you know, you feel like a guest in their house. So I have taken it upon myself. I got funny looks because I parked, like, way far away from the arena. I was at least four blocks away from the arena, and I was on foot and walking to the game. I'm in a suit. I got my laptop bag. I'm walking, and then fans were looking at me like, don't you have a better parking space than this? And I go, no. Like, I just like parking over here like you guys. you know, some side street parking lot that isn't even owned by the...
You do have a better spot. You just choose not to use it.
I can have it accessible to me, but what I don't want is I don't want to be like, this is the greatest arena in the world. You can get in and out of it. Great. What an experience. And then people going, well, where do you park? Well, I valet park. I pull in and some guy takes the keys from me. That's not a real experience. So I don't know what you're looking for at Autzen, Reser, Memorial Coliseum. But the first thing I start with is, can you get in and out? Second thing is the experience of fans going in and out of the stadium or the arena. Can you get in and out in a timely fashion? And I feel like Moda Center has so many entrances that you can get in. And I like that it has kind of that plaza-like feel. There are a lot of places to get into the arena. And it I think the security does a great job of getting people through while also checking them to make sure they're not carrying weapons, but getting them through in a timely fashion. I think that is a huge pat on the back, fist bump. Whoever's in charge of that at Moda Center, whoever's in charge of that at some of the football stadiums, I think it's trickier on a college football Saturday because you're dealing with a different audience and a much bigger audience. You're not dealing with 18 or 19,000. You're dealing with 40 or 50,000 people sometimes at big football games in Eugene. So I got to give credit there to the Trailblazers organization to get people in and out. But I also think the improvements that have been made to Moda Center, whether they are club-level improvements or just 100-level concourse, the concessions are great, and I like the feel of the arena. It's an open concourse. Very different than the building I was in Tampa where the Lightning play just a couple of weeks ago. Very narrowed down, very funnel-like. I didn't like, kind of felt like the ceilings were low. Like, you know, I know what happened. They built that damn arena in Tampa on the cheap, and it has that feel. And then they've made some improvements, but not like they've made at Moda Center. So I'm going to give credit to the Blazers today. Being in buildings like in Louisville, I was in the KFC Yum Center. Really nice building, newer, really nice. Newer than Moda Center. I was in San Jose at what is now called the SP Center, used to be the Shark Tank. Really nice building. Very comparable to Moda Center, but I think the concessions are easier at Moda Center than they were in San Jose. Long lines. That's the other thing I do. I'll walk up instead of taking the media meal. I don't eat the media meal either. No free lunch. It's never free, guys. They can tell you it's a free lunch. It's not free. Comes with strings. I don't take their parking. I don't take their meal. I don't pay to get into the game. Okay, that's where I draw the line. But I... have noticed that the concourse food at Moda is better than some of the arenas I've been to, including KFC Yum Center. Mm. Better. So there you have it. That's my evaluation of the arena. And while I'm giving some credit for Game 1's victory, why not give it to the franchise? Because I beat them like a pinata when they deserve it. Kurt is in Eugene. Kurt, what's on your mind?
Hey, buddy. I've been wanting to make this call for a couple weeks because a few weeks back, as usual, you were thanking your listeners. So I'm calling today on behalf of the listeners that you thank profusely for listening, for who we are and what we do and what we bring to the show. And I think it's important. My grandma was blessed to have around for 107 years.
Whew.
She used expressions like, make hay while the sun shines and you reap what you sow. Well, I think that you reap what you sow here on this show, that you're always thanking people and you're always telling people who you are, and it's honest, and it's fresh, and I just think somebody needs to tell you you're welcome, because in this day and age, I think there's a lot of traditions. We try to teach our kids to say please and thank you, and it's getting harder and harder to do, it seems like, but I just wanted to call today and tell you you're welcome. You do a great job, and I enjoy listening.
Well, I think I appreciate you listening to the show in Eugene on Fox Sports Eugene, 95.7 FM. That's KORE. Here's my thing on... Please, thank you, bless you, all those things. If you mean them, say them. What I don't like is when people say please and thank you as a filler, or if they don't really mean it, or they just feel like they're expected to say it, or you're welcome. I don't need it. I don't do this for the you're welcome. I do it for the money, and I like doing the show.
There, I like your honesty right there.
I'm not doing it for free. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to go to your please and thank you. You know, some of us were taught when we grew up to, We really, I mean, I'll speak for myself. I really do mean it when I say thank you. And I think people get a little uncomfortable with it because they're not used to hearing it so much. And I find that, you know, I think politeness goes a long ways.
Yeah.
And I think if you're taught it, and I genuinely mean it. And so I'll defend it that I think that some of us actually, you know, use it as a, and sometimes you get the same response of, you know, I don't need that. I know you don't need
yeah.
it. I'm not doing it. You know what? In all honesty, I'll be a little selfish here. A lot of times I'm not doing it for you.
Yeah. What are you doing it for?
Doing it for me. Cause I want you to know that I
feel gratitude.
Better. Yeah.
You have gratitude. Gratitude's important.
So I want you to know that.
People who have gratitude are happier. Studies.
I'm happy.
Yeah, you're a grateful person. You have gratitude. I honestly mean it when I look. Like, what happens is every Wednesday we get weekly numbers of the show. And look, I don't live and die with the numbers. It's not why I do the show. I don't do the show because of ratings. I don't do the show because of revenue. The radio station makes a ton of revenue. They measure that revenue. They measure the ratings. They're hung up on it. What I'm mostly interested when I see the ratings, because I can't control those other things, is I'm interested in the demographics. I'm interested in, are we connecting with the audience? I can tell generally how long you've been listening based upon the meters. And look, it's an imperfect science. I also think that a lot of our listeners who are voyeurs never call in, never would tell their friends they listen to the show. There are some people who are afraid, but the numbers just like come back to us. And when we've got double or sometimes triple the number of listeners of the other sports stations in my time slot, I'm never like wagging my finger, because you can very quickly, like Tiger Woods has explained to us, end up on the wrong end of things if you start getting full of yourself. But I look at the numbers and I go, you know, I'm really humbled by the fact that you've got people out there that listen to the show and make it part of their day. And I gotta be truthful with you. Like, when I was probably 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, I was a diehard radio listener. I listened to my sports radio station in the Bay Area, and it was KNBR was my station. And I read the San Jose Mercury News. That was my newspaper. Sometimes I read the Chronicle or the Examiner, but mostly it was the San Jose Mercury News. And my dad would come home from work after a long day. He'd drive through a commute, and he'd pull into the driveway, and I would come running out of the house, and I would greet my father every day. And the first thing we would do is he would hand me the sports section, and I would grab it, and I'd read it, and I'd pour through it. I'd look at the standings, and he was in the house. He'd be changing and doing whatever. By the time he was done, he kind of came out, decompressed, dad, you know, like 15, 20 minutes later. It was us having a discussion about something that was in the sports page. And I relate very deeply to the listeners who might take something we talk about on today's show, like Tiger Woods or the arena experience, the popcorn in the arena, whatever it may be, and then take that back to their own family and have a discussion around the dinner table, or have a, hey, did you hear today? This is what I heard today. Or even somebody who takes it back to work with them. So I'm just incredibly humbled by the number of listeners who listen to the show live, and then the podcast numbers are eye-popping for the amount of people who just grab the podcast and listen to it when they can. It's amazing to me that you have that connection with this show. And I'm not going to always make you happy. I'm not going to always agree with you. We're not going to agree. This is the real world. I'm not here to intentionally inflame you. I'm not here to try to be mean, but I'm going to tell you when I think something's wrong, and I'm going to give a fist bump when I think something's right, and I hope that at the end of it, we can all agree that it's not life and death. This is not war. This is not even the economy. This is a sports radio show. You got the bald-faced truth. Punch it audio next.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the bald-faced truth.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.